We are now going to switch gears and go back to, as my producer said, we are sandwiched in this program today, top and bottom, talking about the shutdown that's taking place in Washington, D.C., and in the United States of America, out of Washington, D.C., that affects all of our lives. We are joined here now by Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation, and Tim Murphy, reporter for Mother Jones, Washington, D.C. Bureau. And Katrina and Tim, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
I was just reading here now that the Washington Post piece just came through a moment ago saying that we better settle in because this could be a very long-term shutdown, Katrina. And this is, in some ways, even despite what happened with Newt Gingrich and President Clinton, this is almost unprecedented. Talk a bit about your analysis of what the genesis of this is and what this means for us.
I think we need to step back and look at the House Republicans. You know, Mark, I hate the kind of journalism that tries to say that there's fault, you know, that there's a standoff or a partisan gridlock. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's this false equivalence journalism which skews the way we view this. This is not partisan gridlock. This is a ferocious struggle with a history within one party between, you might say, traditionalists and the extremists. And just to step back, I mean, how did we get to this place? Extreme gerrymandering, so that these Republicans in the House, the 40 perhaps, are, as a result of the 2010 elections and the redistricting, are in lily white gerrymandered districts that these GOP state legislators crafted after the 2010 census. And in a country, Mark, which is undergoing extraordinary demographic and cultural changes, this is since 95, the last shutdown, transforming this nation. Those changes have deepened the Republicans' marginality. So I think we need to look at that. We also need to look at what many have spoken of, which is this kind of alternative right-wing universe these legislators are operating in, where you have the Hannity, Sean Hannity, saying, stay strong. And finally, I think you need to look at a contempt for the very oath of office that they took to join a government which they seem to hate. But, you know, fine, if they want to repeal Obamacare, do it through the ballot box. Do it in a way that is consistent with our democracy. But this piece of legislation, which they've staked their fate on, and it's not about fiscal responsibility, was passed by both houses of Congress, last I checked, and affirmed by the Supreme Court, and Obama ran on it in 2012. So they're essentially, you know, trying to say, screw democracy. We're going to shut it down, and by force, by coercion. And I think that that is a betrayal of our democracy, which needs to concern everyone as we head into this next period.
And Tim Murphy, I want to come back to some things you raised, Katrina, because I think about the alternative right-wing universe and what that means and why it's there and how powerful it is, seemingly. And I want folks to join us here with your thoughts at 410-319-8888. But Tim, you wrote a really interesting piece about the internal strife inside the Republican Party itself and the one congressman who called his brother and sister Republicans lemmings.
Yeah, that's Congressman Devin Nunes of California, who represents, you know, a very rural part of the Central Valley, and he's never been considered a moderate or obviously a friend of Obamacare. I think he once said that it had been passed using, quote, totalitarian tactics. But over the last couple of days, he's been kind of the loudest voice of opposition to what the House leadership is doing and to what kind of more the Tea Party members of that caucus are doing. He is under the impression that there's not really much of a plan going forward for, you know, the Republican shutdown strategy. He's not sure it's working, and he thinks it's kind of foolish to, you know, put all of your cards into this one, you know, not especially popular policy plank of repealing the Affordable Care Act, which is only now, you know, really going into effect.
So Katrina, let's the three of us jump into this for a moment. Would you? Said towards the end of your comments, which was this alternative right wing universe and being fueled by Sean Hannity.
Rise of this separate GOP. It's not just a media universe, from talk radio hosts to websites to Fox News. It's also FreedomWorks, Dick Armey's organization. It's also Heritage's PAC. I mean, Senator DeMint left the Senate, I guess, a year ago to head Heritage. He was the Tea Party's favorite senator. There's no question, ironically, because the Obamacare plan in some ways is modeled on a Heritage healthcare plan of many moons ago, that Heritage has made defunding Obamacare a central issue for the extremist House Republican members. So I think they're living within this alternative universe where there's no punishment, quote, punishment for extreme behavior, fused with these lily-white gerrymandered districts where the feedback they get is more important, you know, from their constituents who just say defund Obamacare, even if it's sort of unconstrained and untethered from reality or democracy, is what they're responding to. But at some point, it seems to me, listen, the guy who's head of the board of Heritage lives on Park Avenue. At some point, the business, Wall Street, corporate community is going to say, no, we're not going to cripple this government, both at home and in the world, through debt default. And maybe they're going to stand up and say no to these extremists. But at the moment, Boehner can't lead, and you got fear and abject cowering from others in the, quote, traditionalist Republican caucus. So I don't know where the break comes, but it needs to come before the debt ceiling, because if it's fused with what we're seeing now, then we head into risky territory.
And I think that one of the things I was thinking about as you were describing this, Katrina and Tim, is that this is a minority. This is a minority view, but a strong minority view that has taken hold because of gerrymandering and billions of very conservative money behind this. That is kind of taking control here, and that's a pretty frightening prospect, because there's no you could see it in people's faces and eyes as they were kind of most joyous about the conversation about the shutdown, and without fear that if they go back home that they're going to lose.
I mean, I think the media money and gerrymandering, and the money is just going to get worse, Mark. I mean, you have a Supreme Court case next week being heard called FEC versus McCutcheon,
right,
which may make Citizens United look like child's play, could blow off the lids of all levels of contributions direct to candidates. But you have all of those elements, the media, the money, gerrymandering, fueling Republican lawmakers' most obstructionist tendencies. All power to principle, by the way. All power to principle. But fight for principle in democratic ways and not through coercion and holding, never forget, working poor, for example, public workers, the poor, the most vulnerable, are going to be hit hardest by a long-term shutdown.
Tim, you were about to say what?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it goes a little bit beyond gerrymandering. I mean, you know, the GOP majority that you're working with right now and that's been pushing these most conservative measures was largely elected in 2010 before the decennial redistricting, and that has kind of solidified all of their gains in those elections. But it also just so happens, I mean, that they really do represent a minority, but a very large minority of the American population that really does want to scale back all of these different programs. And it's not something where you can just kind of, you know, push back and win a few elections and it's going to go away. This is kind of a spirit of American politics that comes back every decade or every two decades. It's kind
I would argue that you are seeing extraordinary demographic cultural changes. And, you know, the Republicans could affect public policy at the national level. They could embrace minority rights, for example, through immigration reform, or accept a legitimate role for government in the nation's economic affairs, which, by the way, polls show millennials, young people, show support, strong support for. So I think the country is shifting. You have a Republican Party hunkered down and more insular. And, of course, there's unhappiness with Obamacare, but, you know, sure, we wanted Medicare for all, but as with any government social program, including Social Security and Medicare, it takes time to weave into the fabric of people's lives. But the Republicans on some level, I think, are very fearful of Obamacare, a new government social program, succeeding. And I think there's a lot to that in their efforts to obstruct its further progress.
On a couple levels here, one of the things I heard some people argue the other day was that people who have been supporters of the Affordable Health Care Act for a long time and are liberal Democrats in Washington, D.C., kind of blaming single payers for allowing the right wing to use the 70% of Democrats in polls who oppose the Affordable Care Act as a flag. I thought that was kind of absurd, but have you heard that undercurrent?
I mean, that's what the right is saying, using those liberals who oppose Obamacare.
Yes, right.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, listen, there was, as you know, Mark, I mean, there was a strong sense among progressives, among liberals, that Medicare for All was the way to go. It's being worked out in some states like Vermont, And then there was the public option, which was a compromise, and that was bypassed. But at this stage, there is unity, for the most part, in trying to make Obamacare work. And if there was a Republican Party that had some measure of rationality and was willing to compromise, like the history of any social program in this country, Obamacare would be built on and improved. Social Security, when it was enacted, cut out vast swaths of people, African Americans, migrant workers. It wasn't the Social Security program that we know today.
And Tim, since I'm based in Washington, D.C., watching what's going on, what on the Hill, what are your thoughts about where this is going to lead and how long this may take? I mean, because the results could be disastrous on many levels.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the early returns out of Capitol Hill is that we're not going to really see any progress very fast. You know, you're starting to see, I think there are about 14 House Republicans who have now said they would support what's called a clean continuing resolution. So that's, you know, the continuing resolution without provisions to strip, you know, defund the Affordable Care Act. But that's, you know, 14 out of 200, you know, odd members is still not very much. And it might take a while for them to budge on that. Senate Democrats are obviously not going to budge on that. And then you still have House Democrats who, you know, are, you know, if they're going to come along for a compromise, you know, they kind of want something for them, too. So I think it could still be a while. When we went through this in 1995 and 1996, we ended up doing it twice. And, you know, that took about 28 days. And the thing about these shutdowns is the longer they go, the worse off they get. Some of these agencies, like the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, can kind of self-fund for about a week. And then after that, they have to furlough kind of an enormous amount of their staff. So it kind of the longer we play wait and see, the more the pressure will mount.
I mean, I think that people don't realize that the intensity of this, everything from the USDA's SNAP program, from WIC being cut out, to food inspections on grain, other things being cut out, to disability payments not coming out of the VA, pesticide regulation, EPA not being able to do its work. I mean, this could have I think America is not yet really cognizant of the depth of what this means.
No, I think that's right. I mean, I would just come back, a lot of the media coverage, and it's the way it goes, has been about the brinksmanship inside the Beltway. And now, only now, we're getting more on how this shutdown will actually impact people. And it's pretty clear, as I said earlier, Mark, that it's going to impact economic opportunity programs for the working poor. It's going to impact public workers, which, by the way, those are two groups that the Republicans don't have a love affair with already. And I think on some level, you can see it on the right-wing blogosphere. There's a kind of hurrah, hurrah, let's see government deteriorate so people won't see a need for it or don't think it works. So it's a perverse circle. I do fear that, you know, the continuing resolution could be a trap where the debt ceiling, which comes up, I think, October 16th, then gets
right.
folded into it, which didn't happen, wasn't the case in 95, the previous shutdown, nor was it the case in the previous shutdown of 95 that you had a very fragile economic recovery. I mean, what went on then was a fairly booming economy, certainly compared to today. And, you know, I would just end by saying we're at a point where, you know, the shuttering of government comes when unemployment remains in the double digits, certainly for African Americans and Latinos. And I think it will hit very hard in terms of growth, jobs, economic opportunity.
So, I mean, one of the things you said, and I will conclude here with both of you, Katrina and Tim, from both your articles, one of the things you wrote in your blog for The Nation was you see this government shutdown as a coup d'etat.
I was referring in a previous shutdown, 95, the very important political theorist Sheldon Wolin
right.
compared a government shutdown to a coup d'etat, because what it does is it's depoliticizing, disempowering people and taking over a government and trying to shut it down without democratic input. And it counters the idea of our country as a democracy. So I think we need to look hard at that, and I think the way the Republicans are trying to govern, as I said earlier, by not just repealing Obamacare, but you could argue trying to repeal some of the civilizing advances of the 20th century through coercion and threats, is a measure of contempt for elections and for government. I have to end by saying I've never fully understand why these guys raise so many millions to run, to serve a government they want to dismantle, destroy, and despise.
Katrina Van Hool is a publisher and editor of The Nation magazine. Always great to have you with us. It's been a long time.
Thank you,
Katrina. And Tim, let me just close out with you, because I think one of the things you said was that this represents in some ways a large portion of America, a large minority of Americans. But even within that, the majority of Americans, even within that large minority, are opposed to the shutdown. And that's what is so strange about this in some ways.
Yeah, and you know, whether you're conservative or liberal, you know, you still eat, you still use, you know, you still go to national parks, you still apply for mortgages, you still, you know, use all of these different government services that are severely affected by the shutdown. Just to give you, you know, a couple of quick numbers, in Bridgeport, Connecticut yesterday, they shut down 13 Head Start facilities serving 1,000 kids because the grant that's scheduled to come in on October 1st wasn't appropriated as part of the budgeting process. In Arkansas, something like 85,000 meals will not be provided as part of the WIC program for pregnant women and infants because the state of Arkansas was not prepared to pick up the tab when the federal government turned off the spigot. So, you know, this is really affecting thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, even those who aren't furloughed, and it's only going to get worse.
And that's just the beginning. Tim Murphy, reporter from Mother Jones, Washington, D.C. Bureau, and also Katrina Van Den Heuvel, of course, editor and publisher of The Nation. Thank you both so much. Look forward to having you back again. Take care.
Thank you.
I want to tell you on the way out of here, but the news just came across the wire that Tom Clancy, one of the great mystery writers of our time, military thriller writers, died at the age of 66 years old just now. So Tom Clancy has passed away. He's passed that on to you. Just came across the wires. I want to thank you all for being part of this program today. We're going out with Louis Armstrong. Is that right? A bit more. And so we'll give you that little treat because he was one of the favorites of Otis J. Rennie, born in 1898, who started one of the first black-owned record companies in America, Exclusive and Excelsior Records. Go up with a little bit of that. And thank you all for listening and tuning in today, being part of this program. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. You can podcast this show again. Check out what all of our guests have been writing and thinking and talking about by visiting steinershow.org. You can also listen to and podcast all of our work on iTunes now. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, stay tuned for Tell Me More and Michelle Martin. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Now the pale moon shining on the field below, the folks are crooning soft and low. You didn't tell me why, because I know, yes, when a sleepy time dawns out, yes, the soft wind blowing through the pine trees, the folks down there live a life